Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hello and welcome to Rock That Relationship. We are on season six and this is such an exciting season because of all of the great conversations we're having with so many folks about relationships, flourishing relationships, maintaining relationships. You know, really you've dated, you've fallen in love and there you are and you're in this relationship and you say to yourself, how do I make it the best it can possibly be? And so we are thrilled today to have on Barbara J. Hunt. She's a forgiveness specialist who's going to be talking to us today a little bit about self-forgiveness, which is, really important as we look at this kind of larger scope of forgiveness and relationships. But, you know, we focus a lot on forgiving others, but what about forgiving ourselves for, you know, any kind of things that have come up that we may be responsible for, in a relationship? So Barbara, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, excellent. Well, you know, as I mentioned before, we focus a lot on forgiving others, which is really, really important because I know as a forgiveness specialist, this is a much wider, you know, topic than what we're hitting on today with just the self-forgiveness piece. But why is self-forgiveness so important, particularly, you know, as we think about like a romantic relationship or a long-term partnership or marriage with someone? Why is self-forgiveness something we should be really focusing on?
Well, I think of it in context of all of the forgiveness practice that we need to be doing. And one of the things I love talking about is having forgiveness as a practice, just like we would do yoga practice. You don't say, oh, I've done yoga. It's an ongoing thing. And I think that applies even more so to our relationship with ourselves, because we've been ourselves for however many decades. And a lot of my focus is on the internal experience. So although it may be that somebody's done something in a relationship or there's an externalization, really the field of forgiveness, if you like, is an internal one. And we have to be really honest with ourselves. And I think sometimes we might be afraid of admitting our shadows, and particularly admitting our shadows to ourselves, even though we know what we're like, really. And it's hard to have any perspective. I think that's one of the most obvious things about self-forgiveness is you're you. So you have almost no objectivity about that at all. And I think forgiveness is incredibly complex. I think of it as a master spiritual practice if you have any kind of spiritual faith. If you don't, it's a master secular ethics practice, and it's a mental and emotional practice. And your relationship with yourself is lifelong. And so how do you nurture a healthy internal relationship with yourself as well as then that spilling out into your everyday other relationships?
Yeah, there's two interesting things that you said in there that I want to touch back on, that your relationship with yourself is lifelong, which is so interesting because we think of the relationship with someone else is so important, right? But that could be 5 years, 8 years, could be 6 months. And then that person is, you know, out of your life or they move to a different place in your life, but you're always with yourself. I mean, I think that's so interesting the way you said that, because I don't think many people think of it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's exactly the problem, is that we're just so busy doing our lives and living that having that moment to just step back and reflect on how am I? And sometimes it happens when you have a crisis. Sometimes it happens when you have a relationship crisis that you have that, you know, who am I? And, you know, you actually do reflect. But a lot of the time we're on automatic pilot and we're not questioning those inner beliefs and stories and old values, the old programming. Unless you are on some kind of personal or spiritual development path, you may just be unconscious to all of that material.
Well, it's interesting. I was just in Thailand for 2 weeks and I was at a elephant sanctuary, and there were a lot of people from around the world there, a lot of people traveling to find themselves, you know, younger people. There were a lot of younger people, but then there were people my age in their 50s, you know, trying to reevaluate their life. It was really interesting because people don't stop to do, they feel like they have to take a trip to do that. Like they have to leave their home or leave, you know, their life to figure out what they really want. And what it boiled down to was, what does each person really want for themselves and their life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think when you put yourself in a different environment, you can, that's similar to what I was saying about stepping back and thinking about yourself. You put yourself in a different environment, different, you know, smells and cultures and views. So you're automatically not in your automatic behavior in the same extent.
Well, that was the interesting thing is a lot of the, you know, we had a lot of time downtime, right? So sitting around the evening or whatever, having a drink, and people who said they normally wouldn't share, they wouldn't talk about this stuff at home, are sitting there talking to people we just met, right? It was kind of like camp where, okay, you're all together day one, you meet people, you know, form relationships. And I thought that was so interesting that throughout that week, people really opened up who said that they wouldn't do that at home. And that, why, do you know why we do that? Why are we like so afraid in our daily life? I mean, I think that goes to what you're saying. If you can expound on the whole thing of shadow, because I'm not sure everyone knows what shadow means.
Sure. Well, I love what you're saying about how people can be show up differently in different environments. And you would normally say, well, that's not me to share.
Yeah.
I'm not mm-hmm. like that. Actually, mm-hmm. I think we have a much broader palette of all the things we could be. If you think when you're a kid, you play every role, don't you? You know, sometimes you're the convict, sometimes you're the police people, sometimes you're, you know, like the doctor, sometimes you're, you know, the victim. You know, it's like, you know, there's all the different roles that we play out. And then we gradually stop doing that as we become adults and get very set in our ways about, well, this is me and that's not me. As opposed to, I have all of these personality traits available, all these different parts. And what I mean about shadow really are, and they're, I mean, technically, psychologically, they're referred to as the parts of ourselves that we don't see, the unconscious material. So, of course, if you can't see it, you can't talk about it. But then, you know, that's why you would go into therapy to discover mm-hmm. what you're not admitting to yourself, and with the help of somebody else, look at those things. But shadow can be the things that we're ashamed of about ourselves, or those inner beliefs that we have, like I'm not good enough, or I'm not worthy, or I'm a failure, or I'm too much, or I am always be alone. You know, those kind of, we don't tend to talk about those very often unless we're in a really, really deep conversation with somebody, or there's a context where we would have those conversations. But I think so many of us have those core beliefs that we worry about, or maybe we'll try and ignore, or we'll drink, or we'll watch Netflix, or we'll try and distract ourselves from actually just looking at those beliefs, because often they're not even true. And so when I talk about self-forgiveness, I do have a slightly different approach from my normal work with forgiveness, because you need to know what you're accusing yourself of first. Yes. Before you forgive yourself, because there's no point in forgiving yourself for things that actually aren't true about you. If you telling yourself you've got an old belief, I'm selfish, that maybe there are lots of examples of when you weren't selfish. You know, everybody can be selfish, you know, at times. Sometimes we're more selfish, you know, than in others. But to say that to yourself, I'm fundamentally selfish, may or may not be true. And so you'd need to engage with the validity of some of that core materials, which, you know, you would call shadow material.
Which brings it back to my whole point of why this is what the point I try to make in every episode, how we need therapy, right? That even all the people who think they don't need therapy, it's just good to do it. I think once in your life, at least try and get into it, because that shadow stuff comes from what other people's perceptions of us, or what we were told as children, or it's like, what do you call that when people are putting something on you?
Projecting.
Projecting onto your parents, project onto you, I just started doing that work with the website called To Be Magnetic, the shadow stuff. And it's like all the stuff that was put into you as a child. So you're born, you come out, and you are who you are. But then as you grow, it's like people are putting things into you. They're going into your head, and that becomes a part of you that maybe really isn't. It's like somebody else's projection on you that you then take on.
Yeah, or it's programming. It's not just the projections, because obviously that does happen, but also just your conclusions. So you stand up in front of a group of kids and you start singing and you forget the words. And your internal dialogue is, I am never going to do that again because it's too dangerous and everybody laughed at me. And so you never sing again in public, and that becomes part of who you are. And that's so it's not just people putting things in, but our responses, which can be, and I love this phrase, very intelligent coping mechanisms. Sometimes we do need to do those things and we need to take them on board because it protects us in that moment. The trouble is, when you get to, you know, in your like later years and you really want to join a community choir and you still have that belief, I can't sing, then that's holding you back, which is why I agree with you, Tracy, about, you know, needing to, we all need support in our investigation about who we are and what doesn't, you know, not necessarily even like regular therapy, but also or coaching or, you know, just somebody like to dialogue with who, or spiritual practice, you know, or meditation, anything that's really going to help you to engage with that inner world. And one other thing just generally about our culture at the moment is we talk a lot about mental health, and what we're really talking about is mental and emotional health. And I always like to talk about the distinction and how we need to untangle our minds and our hearts, because we conflate them, or we just kind of tangle it all up together. And talking about mental health, it may be to do with what we're thinking, but often we're talking about our relationships or our feelings or our emotions. And even culturally, we say, oh, I'm feeling emotional. And that's a big, broad, kind of expansive word that covers. Is that rage? Is that jealousy? Is that shame? Is that sad? Is that joy? Because that's all, they're all emotions. So to get very specific about what we're talking about, is it our thinking or is it our feeling? That can be really helpful just as in our exploration in general.
Yeah, I mean, I love this conversation. Are we talking about those things that we hold inside ourselves and have to, I think what you said about the knowing what you're accusing yourself of, so you can let it go, move through it, whatever you need to do. What about those situations where maybe you knowingly did something wrong that you regret, like you've hurt somebody, you've said something, you've done something, but you also, you want to make kind of, you know, recompense for it or do something, but at the same time, you're still feeling that guilt, the shame, because when you do question yourself, you're like, yeah, I did do that. What about those kind of instances? How do you deal with that kind of self-forgiveness?
Yeah, well, again, back to the first part, I would see it in two parts. And that would be to engage with that kind of material. Because if you've done something, and it has hurt somebody else. That's true. That has happened. But we often have quite a lot of other stuff around that. Like, I'm a bad person, I can't be trusted, so you would work with that material to, and I, there's a particular process that I sometimes use with my clients called panning for gold, where you're looking for actually what's true, rather than all of the other stuff around it, all that sort of self-abnegation and criticism. And getting to what's actually true means that you get that very simple, I did do that thing. And I did choose it. You know, sometimes, especially like in relationships where there's been infidelity, you're choosing to be unfaithful. No, and you're maybe ignoring the consequences that could have, but you actually are choosing it. And to be honest about that is really, really important. And so the truth of that situation would be, yes, I chose to do that, regardless of what the consequences might have been to the people who were involved. And that's a big deal. Then how do you sit with that, with the shame, with the guilt? And again, this would be a time when you need somebody else to help you work through this sort of thing. You can't do this stuff on your own. You can do a little practice, a bit like the difference between doing a home practice yoga and going to a class. It's like, or, you know, having a one-to-one. It's like you need either a group to help work through that kind of thing or one-to-one. And then the other part, and all of my forgiveness work that's done, the idea of whether or not you reconcile or make amends or seek some kind of, you know, atonement, you know, or even restorative justice, that's kind of part three, if you like. That's what happens after you've done the internal work. And for me, all forgiveness work is ideally firstly done in an imaginary conversation guided by somebody like me who would help you to go through that material. Because I think most of the time when we're resenting somebody or we're holding grievances against them or we've done something to hurt somebody else, there's a lot of live material. And I always say you don't forgive somebody face to face unless you're both enlightened, because no one wants to sit there long enough to hear the full extent of your resentment against them, or you don't want to hear that if you've hurt somebody. It's hard to do that. So the way I work with people is to do that kind of work as a preparatory process, so that, and I sometimes describe it like this. I'm for those who are, you might not see this part, if this is just on the audio, but holding up a whole kind of pile of pens in a pot. And these are all our resentments and our grievances, or all the things that we've done. And it may be that there's one thing that you need to have a conversation with somebody about, the really important need that's not being met, or the thing that needs to be repaired, as opposed to just dumping out all of the material that, you know, I resent you for the petty things, and you don't pick your shoes up and you leave the lid off the toothpaste and, you know, all of that. We just get defensive. It's really hard for us to hear that kind of thing. But if you've cleared your side of things in a relationship version, then you can come to the other person with something that needs to be addressed. And if it's you, if this is the same thing, if it's self-forgiveness, these are all the grievances that you would have against yourself. And so we're going to sift through preliminarily so that we just work out what's actually true. So a lot of that material is not true. So we're just dealing with these things. And then it's an inner encounter with, well, if I did choose to do that, is that something that I now need to make amends for? Because there may need to be amends. There may need to be apology. That's about the other person. And then there's also, how do I reconcile with myself? Because often the things that happen that we do, they don't fit our self-image. So I might think of myself as a kind person, and yet I did that thing to my neighbor or, you know, to a spouse. So it's, you know, it is actually back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, which is that self-image is like, who do we think we are? And that's why the idea of opening our capacity to admit, there but for the grace of God go I, yes, actually I am capable of being incredibly jealous or selfish or mean, or and being honest about, I have those capacities. Most of the time I might be choosing to not express them into the world, but I am like that sometimes. And then, do I choose to not hold ill will against myself for that as a consequence, or do I hold on to it? And just one other thing about the self-forgiveness, the reason why people find it so hard to forgive primarily is because they're afraid that if they, like they call it, let themselves off the hook, if they let themselves off the hook, they might do it again. And the truth is that we might do it again anyway. You know, and it's much more, again, of a reconciling about, well, who do I want to be? How do I want to be? What values do I want to live my life by? And that's what's really important about having that inner reconciliation with yourself about your core values.
Okay, so this is very interesting to me. And then I also want to go back to the emotional versus mental health, because I don't think I've ever heard that distinction before. I think that's very important. But like forgiveness for yourself, I'm very good at that. I'm very good at apologizing, and I'm very good at like accepting the criticism, okay, that I've done something wrong, and then fixing that, because in my opinion, I've never been guilted. Like I wasn't raised in a religious house where there was a lot of guilt or shame. I don't feel shame. Like I've done a lot of therapy, and I feel like I'm not going to be a perfect person. I make mistakes. And then I deal with them head on. And I wonder, what are those big barriers to people being able to access that, like, forgiveness for themselves? I see people who are more, I don't know if you'd call it neurotic or anxious, or like they're constantly like beating themselves up, right? And like, oh my gosh, I did this wrong. I did this wrong. I'm not good enough. Or you see it that there's this like guilt. I see it with friends who were raised in a more religious environment, like this guilt over everything. Like, oh my God, let it go. Are there external barriers to like really being able to forgive yourself or like help yourself move on? I mean, that's again where I think therapy has helped me so much. And I didn't start with any of those barriers, but I see it in other people. It's like, God, let it go. you know, who's really judging you? Is it you judging you, or is it like something was put on you from your parents or from whoever? Am I making any sense? I don't know.
Yes, you are. I don't know if there are any external, you know, like you said, we might have taken things on from our upbringing or our parents, but we internalize the external. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's still back to us. And the truth is, when you look underneath the hood of the whole game with resentment, and this applies to all forgiveness, not just self-forgiveness, is that we get something out of holding our resentments. And we don't like to admit that either, because that's again back in the realm of the shadow. So either we get, you know, we get to cover our hearts, we make them a bit harder, and this can be against ourselves, so that there's a bit of protection. That's one of the number one reasons why we hold our resentments, because people sometimes talk about unforgiveness, and I like to call it what it is, resentment. So we're holding our resentment or our ill will against ourselves for good reason. And sometimes, yes, it's because something happened or we did something, but also it can be because we get something out of it. There's a benefit to us. And so in those cases where somebody's putting themselves down and going, oh, I'm so terrible, and, you know, I'm blah, 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 that sometimes putting yourself down can be a defensive way of deflecting somebody else's criticism. Because if you've already raised yourself to the ground, it doesn't really matter what anybody else says. They're not going to get you to go any lower if you've already gone down there. But also, there must be some kind of payoff for you, otherwise you wouldn't hold on. And these are quite hard, and I cover these in my book in general about forgiveness, about the five biggest obstacles to forgiveness. And one of them in particular is this whole dance with resentment and how we actually get something out of it. Sometimes we get the moral high ground. You know, sometimes we get to make excuses. And I think in the case of self-forgiveness, if we are saying, oh, I'm such a terrible person, that's why I, you know, drink every evening. Or, you know, that's why I, you know, I have to stay in this terrible relationship because I've done something wrong, and so therefore I don't deserve anything better. Again, you're getting a benefit out of holding that resentment against yourself, because if you really forgave yourself, then, you know, what would, you know, you might do it again, or something might change. You might have to admit something about yourself or do something differently. And interestingly, I was at a conference a while ago in the UK, and there was a couple there who, not a couple, but like two people. And this woman's son had been attacked in a pub, and the blow had caused him to fall back and damage his head. And then he died of his brain injury. Mm. And the guy who'd punched him was there. They'd been through a restorative justice, you know, like just that had been facilitated as part of their healing. And they were then traveling together as an example of people who've actually managed to reconcile even that kind of challenging thing. And I was really curious about the self-forgiveness part, like had he forgiven himself? Mm. And how would we as an audience have judged him, right, if he'd gone up and said, yes, I've completely forgiven myself?
Yeah, we'd, you know, be mad at him, right? Yeah. We'd say, yeah, outrageous, absolutely. You killed someone, you know? Yeah. You should suffer. You should feel bad for the rest of your life, but should they? Right.
Well, exactly. You see that, that's the, you know, like, so although I was saying it's all internal, but actually there is an external as well about what we expect. If someone has done something bad, you know, or wrong, we expect some kind of balance or injustice. And it's this, and, you know, and it's the same with ourselves, except it's just much more internal.
So that's interesting. Very, like, as you're talking about it, this idea of we sort of expect other people who have done something bad to feel bad about it forever. Because that's their punishment. Whereas that's not helpful. And I think about when we transition that, like we think about it in relationships, you know, and people might have had, you know, a trust issue, infidelity or something early on, and 20 years later, you know, bringing it up because they want that person to still feel bad about it. Because, you know, the idea that they have forgiven themselves looks to the other partner potentially like, you know, you're not sad or sorry, or you don't take this as seriously as I do. So that's kind of an interesting thought.
Well, is there a way to forgive yourself and yet still hold yourself accountable? Or or hold yourself to a higher standard of behavior going forward? Do you always have to like beat yourself up for making bad judgment or, you know?
Yeah, I think the beating yourself up is optional. I mean, definitely taking on board and feeling the feelings, including shame or guilt, and then also making amends, you know, like in the 12-step program, you know, part of that is about making amends to the people that you've transgressed against. And it's really important. And that I think making amends to yourself too. And choosing, because it's ultimately is about choosing. You know, you choose whether or not you hold the ill will. You choose whether or not you're going to have a compassionate view of yourself. Because my sense is, after working with thousands of people, is when you look on the back of their packet and you see the ingredients, you know, their life story, that everyone makes sense. You know, like, oh, so you were abused, or that you were forced to, you know, like leave your home and then go and live in a completely foreign country at four, or, you know, like, you know, we make sense when you know our background, so we can be more compassionate. And we don't want to go, oh, it's okay. Yeah, no, it's fine. You just go ahead and do whatever you want. It's, you know, it's like we need to hold clear boundaries. And I think that's another place where forgiveness gets a lot of bad rap, because forgiveness is not about condoning unacceptable behavior. It's not saying it's okay. It's not saying I'm going to waive my right to divorcing or taking legal action, you know, but you don't have to hate somebody. The resentment, and including it, you know, against yourself, is optional. And that's the important thing, is we think it's an inevitability as opposed to an option. And it's actually pointless, because if I'm holding onto my resentment against somebody, and I've got this, and then I'm holding onto for years, decades, and I'm holding it really, really, really hard, like really hard. Like that's, you know, even if it's like against myself, I'm really, really judging myself and hating myself and putting myself down. Nothing's changing. Like, that's making no difference.
But also, this visual, right? So our listeners can't see, you're holding like a book up and then a thing of pens, and you're like squeezing yourself. And as I look at you, I see, let's say you're in a relationship and you're holding that like stuff against yourself. It's closing you off from the other person also, right? Like it's having an effect in that relationship, because how can you be open to somebody else if you're constantly, if like you're holding that forever, you've got to carry this around with you. It's like an extra burden that is a barrier to relationship with other people, be it a partner or somebody else. And I've noticed that in life, the more bitter people, like I've chosen not to be bitter. I'm not bitter. Like I'm friends with exes. I don't judge myself. My exes, who I'm good friends with, always say what a jerk I used to be. And they say like, I'm much better now. And I don't care. Like I'm not holding that against myself. Like, I want to live my life. I have this one, maybe 100 years, maybe I get 80. I don't know. But like, I'm not going to, I notice when I encounter people who are bitter, it's a turnoff, or it's traumatizing to me. Like, it's like, what are you doing? How's that serving you? How is that helping you?
Yeah, I totally agree. And it is toxic. And there's a couple of really lovely, quite famous quotes about resentment. One is that it's like taking poison and hoping the other person will die. Mm-hmm. Or my favorite, which is it's like setting yourself on fire and hoping the other person will be bothered by the smoke. And, you know, that your rage consumes you. You're the fuel for your rage. But you're absolutely right, though, Tracy, because we do get stuff out of holding our resentment. Even if it looks like a big martyr drama, or a big, like, I'm such a terrible person, you know, I don't deserve anything good, and a sort of like a pity party, that you're still getting something. It might not look very, very attractive to other people, but it absolves you of maybe taking responsibility for what you did. Maybe it absolves you from making amends, which is much harder, you know, because sometimes, you know, how can you make amends for some things? You can't change it.
I've done human rights work. I'm an attorney, and I did study like Rwanda. I lived in Cambodia and post-genocidal stuff. And that is big stuff. And I guess once you see that somebody can sit with the family, you know, with somebody who killed your family member, like, why are you going to be upset about this other stuff? Like, in a relationship, we are all going to be jerks sometimes. And I think to try and hold ourselves to some perfect standard is wrong. And so I guess that repair, that forgiveness is part of that repairing process. And it's so important. I mean, it does sound lame, or it sounds like I'm a, you know, I don't know what, self-centered person, where I'm like, I'm not going to let my mistakes like affect my future. Like, I did it. I'm sorry. I'm very good at that. Like, I'm sorry. And I think it's really helped me. I mean, you know, it's helped me to move forward. And it's interesting because, I mean, we put out what, Corey, 51 episodes of our podcast, and we're talking about basically how we messed up a whole bunch of relationships. I mean, that's basically why we started the podcast. And I've heard from an ex or two how horrible I am and how I should look at myself. And I'm like, I am. That's what I'm spending this whole podcast doing, right? But I'm also not going to live in a way that's like hurting myself going forward. And I feel like all of us would be so much better if we could look at our lives, look at, do that shadow work. You know, I think what you're doing is so helpful and important for so many people. And it's not really, I don't feel like it's really talked about. And I think people really don't understand, a lot of people don't understand the purpose of therapy or coaching.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think that forgiveness work, you know, from my point of view, everybody needs to forgive everybody for everything all the time. You know, like the original kind of, you know, Jesus's, you know, master spiritual teacher, you don't have to believe in Jesus or anything to mm-hmm. hear the message, which was, how many times do I forgive my brother? 70 times seven, which is like, that's all the time. That's whenever you need to, that it's a practice. It's something that you need to practice doing. And if you think about it as work of the heart, so back to what you were saying, Craig, you know, it's about, what do you want to hold in your heart? Do you want to hold bitterness or resentment? And like you were saying, Tracy, as well, it's like the toxicity of other people. It's really unpleasant to be around. Yes, sometimes you can get off, you know, with somebody saying, oh, you know, my mother's like this and my mother's like that. And you have a bit of a sort of like resentment fest together. But actually, it's quite unpleasant to be around somebody who is continually telling you how awful this particular family member or loved one is, rather than getting the help that they need to free themselves of the resentment. But that's because that's the work that needs to be done. But it's so abstract. You know, forgiveness is an undoing. It's a bit like giving up some kind of, you know, reprehensible behavior. When you give up smoking, you're not doing something. And it's the same with forgiveness. You're not holding your resentment. That's the definition that I use that came from one of my original teachers, K. Bradford Brown. And he says, forgiveness is the absolute refusal to hold ill will against someone for what they did or didn't do. And, you know, that could apply to yourself, you know, the absolute refusal to hold ill will against yourself. And that's, you know, Tracy, that sounds like what you're choosing to do. You're choosing to, I'm not going to hold ill will against myself. I'm going to make my behavior better in the future. I'm going to try and make amends with the people I need to make amends with. But I'm not going to just put myself down about it. I'm not going to hold ill will against myself for it, because it doesn't help. It doesn't change anything. Changing your behavior in the future, that changes something. And like you, with when I was doing my forgiveness work on my previous relationships, there's the sort of three different strands that come up. One is I'm resenting them for all the things that they did wrong. Then I'm asking them to forgive me for all the things that I participated in. And there was a weird, you know, continuity through all of those. Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I did that. Oh yeah, I was like that. And then there's also the self-forgiveness. So that it's like a plat that comes together. There's the three. And just one other thing, just about the sort of internal workings of forgiveness, and this I think also applies to self-forgiveness, is that there is a really strong correlation or relationship between forgiveness and grief. And they're like siblings. They often come together. We can't forgive because we don't want to grieve what we didn't get, or we can't forgive because we don't, no, it's the other way around. We can't grieve because we can't forgive. So they often come together, and it's, that's very subtle when that's in the realm of self-forgiveness, because it may be that you need to grieve something that you did wrong.
That is, wow. it's kind of blowing my mind here because, you know, when you were talking back about the idea about how we get something from resentment, right? From our own self-resentment, I'm thinking about a scenario, like I'll just give an example of a scenario for me and just thinking it could apply in any kind of situation. So I've been in several different romantic relationships and in kind of doing the debrief after, you know, when I look back at all of them, they had one thing in common was I stayed longer than I should have. And now I'm trying to learn to forgive myself for making those choices, but I don't know if I even need to forgive myself. Was it too long in the moment? Was it really too long? Or is it just now that, you know, hindsight's 2020, but forgiving myself now because I don't want to in the future stay longer when something becomes unideal. But I do think when you're talking about that resentment piece and getting something out of it is I can use that as a crutch or an excuse that if I make the same choice again, that I can say, well, this is a pattern. I've always done it like this. And for some reason, it almost makes it so that I don't have to take some accountability because I'm like, oh, I saw this coming. I knew that I was going to act like this. And I think when I see that and other people make choices like, well, that's just how I respond when I get upset or kind of looking back and blaming it on like a pattern so that you almost give yourself like let off the hook. So you're almost over forgiving, right? The other direction going forward. So I didn't know what your thoughts are on kind of using it as a crutch and sort of pre-forgiving yourself for just making an excuse for a bit, maybe a behavior that isn't that productive.
Yeah, that's a really great point. A bit like a get out of free jail card. Mm-hmm. You use it for anything. Oh yes, I've got this. I resent myself already. I'm already resenting myself.
Exactly.
For you. You don't have to. I'm already doing it.
Right. Yeah, so 3 years down the road, I've already feel bad about what I'm about to do.
Yeah. Exactly. I've done that. I'm ready for that one. Yeah. But the other possibility, which could sound radical, is rather than judging yourself for having stayed too long in all the relationships, or if even if you didn't, but like say that was true and there was an official too long, you could work through that. Is it actually too long, like you said, or is it just like it was long enough and maybe it took you longer? And then you'd look back at the other, you know, what's the patterning in you that created that you weren't able to say what you needed perhaps during that relationship, or mm-hmm. that didn't recognize that you were in pain before it was time to, you know, in advance of that. So rather than, because this really is our option, rather than making ourselves wrong and judging ourselves and resenting ourselves, we could be compassionate and go, oh, hun, I'm so sorry. I really was not listening to when you wanted that thing. And I've stopped you really hearing the call of your heart to just to try and please other people and have more of a compassionate approach rather than a self-recriminating. And that often happens as part of, you know, your self-forgiveness work. It's like, wow, you know, and I really do believe that most of the time we're trying to do the best we can and we only realize. And then when you have the hindsight, you're going, oh God, why didn't I see that before? You know, but you exactly. couldn't see it before because you didn't see it before.
Corey and I are going on a long hike tomorrow. We're going to talk about this because we've talked about her pattern of that before. And she really beats herself up. She's one of those people who goes over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And I feel like that's the self-forgiveness piece that like move on. Like you did it. Like, you know, like apologize to yourself or whatever. Like, do you need to sit down with yourself and have a talk with yourself?
I reckon. Yeah. Uh-huh. The way I work with clients when we're doing forgiveness work in general and self-forgiveness is active imagination, like the Jungian active imagination process where you're visualizing and you're having conversations, but you're actually speaking out loud. And for self-forgiveness, you would speak to a younger version of yourself. So, you know, you'd go back to the younger yous who'd had those relationships and you'd speak to her. And that kind of approach I find is really gentle but it's also very honest because it's imaginary. You can say what you like because it's just in front of the therapist, but you can say all the things that you wouldn't really necessarily want to say to somebody's face because it would expose how petty you are. We mm-hmm. all are. And so it's a really lovely way of being able to acknowledge your anger and where are your boundaries and to say all the sweary things that you need to say to really get it off your chest. And then part of the process is to take a different perspective. So you then are able to, a bit like in Scrooge, you know, when he gets taken up by the ghosts of past, present and future, you take a different perspective and you look back on your life seeing, you know, if I'd known better, I would have done better in my early relationships. I didn't understand about attachment theory until, you know, I was in my 40s. And so right. if I'd understood about that, I would have not had maybe so many ridiculous relationships. You know, it's like, but I didn't know. And right. I make sense, you know, even like sometimes the personality typing, when I discovered I was a 5 on the Enneagram, I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense. That makes sense of why you're so weird. You know, so it's, you know, just having that willingness to be compassionate about what we discover is really important.
This is so great. Okay. So before we close, I want to have you explain emotional versus mental health. And also, I do think the entire world could benefit from a few sessions with you. So I think that we should get as many people signed up with you as possible. Like if somebody just did a couple sessions and really like went through their own life and let themselves off the hook for whatever the things that they've done. I mean, what you just said about attachment theory, you know, I got divorced at the age of 47, 50 or something like that, like around my 50s. I never even thought I'd be married, let alone a divorcee, right? And it was because I didn't understand attachment theory. Even though I was married to a psychologist for 8 years, I could not hear what she was saying until we went to get divorced. And, you know, I continued with my therapy. And like all the things that she tried to tell me, I couldn't hear from her. And I think it's because I had never, like, you have to do this work on yourself. And I do think that, you know, if people could go through their life, sit down and have an assessment of their life and forgive themselves. There was that Mel Brooks movie where they're, it was, I think Meryl Streep, and they die and they go to heaven and their whole life is just shown to them on a movie screen, which that's how, ever since I saw that movie, that's how I live my life. Like, what if when I die, this is going to be on screen and I'm going to have to account for it, right? So I think everybody's got to do that and let themselves off the hook and move forward doing better and yeah. also understanding themselves or like not being so hard on themselves.
Yeah. The only thing I disagree with slightly is the let yourself off the hook, because forgiveness is not about letting yourself off the hook. Forgiveness is about not holding the ill will against yourself and judging yourself. But it's remaining accountable, which is what you said. You want to stay accountable. So you're not really letting yourself off the hook. In fact, you're keeping yourself accountable to a higher level of, you know, better behavior, more in alignment with your values and inner directive, you know, whatever that might be. But I totally agree with you about everyone needs to do the inner work. And I tend to do 6 sessions with people because you kind of want to do, I used to work on a retreat and we used to say, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. So definitely mum, definitely dad, siblings or no siblings. There's usually something usually going on there, or maybe a missing member of the family, maybe a sibling who died young, or a premature birth or something that, you know, there's usually something, sometimes grandparent, early childhood. So you're going to have either a best friend or somebody who was horrible, best enemy, early teachers, then your love relationships, then the current, and then the political situation. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, that's a big list. And when I first was invited to write my forgiveness list on a particular personal development training many years ago, I got to number 36 and thought, yeah, I probably resent my mom, because I lowered my bar for like all the people that I thought I needed to forgive. And you can do a lot of that work once you have an idea of the process. You do a lot of that work just, you know, you can do that by yourself or when you're driving or out for a hike. That's when I often do my forgiveness work. But the deep stuff, I work with a friend. We do swaps together. We kind of develop this work. So it's, you know, it's really important that you do get the support to do it. And just one last little thing about the potential of forgiveness. And this is one of the reasons why I'm such an enthusiast, is because the potential of forgiveness is literally world transforming. Because if you think we're all doing this all the time about everybody,
right,
all the people we hate in the world, and we could do this. And so if we let go of our ill will against everyone, because we could, because it's a choice, we would be living in a completely different world. And so then you have to ask yourself, why don't we? And that's when it gets really interesting. If it is technically, it's possible, just like it's possible for us to, you know, share the food out better. We could, right. So why don't we? And some of the reason we don't share the food out better is because we don't do this.
We don't, right. So, yeah. What you're doing is holding stuff to you and letting go. And so
letting it go. letting go of the inner. Yeah. So I still haven't answered your question about emotional and mental.
Yeah. What's the difference between emotional and mental health? Because I think that's huge and I haven't heard that before.
I do too. And I haven't heard it before either, which is why I talk about it. It's because I just think we're so fascinated by the mental idea that we, you know, it's what you're thinking and you're, and we don't even though we might talk about panic attacks or, you know, self-esteem, it's like we're still thinking it's just about our thinking as opposed to our physiology, our emotions, you know, what we feel in our hearts, the work of the heart. The work of the heart is about meaning. And I know that you could say that's also to do with your thinking, but it's about what matters to us. You know, it's about our, it's like, I don't know, like a palette of emotional experience that we don't let ourselves have, like just the guide on your printer. If you close that in, you can't close just one side, you close it all down. So if we're only having a very narrow experience of life and not letting ourselves feel all of the different feelings that are available to us, and there's a difference between our thinking and our feeling, and we conflate those as well. You know, we say I feel betrayed. No, you think you've been betrayed or you have been betrayed. What you feel is a mixture of resentment, anger, bewilderment, hurt. And again, so that's why I try and separate them out, because then you know what you're talking about. You're talking about either the meaning that you've given something and your interpretation of it, or you're talking about what do you feel in response to that. And it's, I think it's really important.
Yeah, I think that's huge.
So where do people start? I mean, like when I think about, okay, I want to, you know, forgive myself and for, you know, not knowing what I, you know, didn't know, right? Like you can't hold yourself accountable for something you didn't know. It's that's a little hindsight 2020 thing. But, you know, just in general, like if there's something you want to let go of, like I had some self-resentment for some things around an ex that I held onto for like 20 years, and I needed to deal with it within myself. It had nothing to do with her. And it took me like 20 years, but that was just like a painful 20 years. And it was like an unnecessary suffering. And I knew, like I consciously knew, like I needed to, you know, release the grip on the pens, like you're saying, and let it go. But where does one start?
Well, the very first starting place is acknowledging in the first place that you're holding on to it. So that is definitely the place to start, is to do, in fact, again, back into the 12-step programs where you do a radical inventory. You need to be really honest with yourself and just say, actually, this is what I'm holding resentment against myself for. So you can keep a list. I mean, I do recommend that people keep a list of the people they need to forgive. So, and the things, you know, helicopters or whatever it is. That was one of mine recently. And then so keep that list. But also if there are grievances that you're holding against yourself, to keep that as a list too, and then to work with that. So with the self-forgiveness, to really look at the meaning you're making, because it's like we were saying before, for the meaning that you're giving it, rather than, oh, I didn't know better, is this, I should have known better, I'm stupid, I don't take care of myself, I don't deserve relationships, you know, all the meaning, the mean meaning that we often make, our internal critic will, you know, pile in. And working through that material, using those kinds of, you know, like Byron Katie's work, have you come across her work? She has something called The Work, and you're asking yourself questions. And she even has something called a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, but you can do it against yourself as well. But, you know, just asking questions like, is it true? And one of the most important things you can just do is just to ask yourself when you're believing something about yourself, is it true? Is it false? Is it something I don't know? Because those, you know, just even that means that you've stepped away. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get a bit of distance between us. Otherwise, it's just like it's so in your face that you need to kind of like, oh, I'm judging myself, didn't realize. So it kind of takes radical self-honesty. I think that would be the very first place to start, and have an intention to not hold your ill will, because that, you know, really is like back to what you were saying, Tracy, it's a choice. Mm-hmm. You choose to not beat yourself up. That's a choice. Mm-hmm.
Did you,
before you jump in, Tracy, can I get the name of that person again? I'm going to go ahead and add her to the show notes.
She's called Byron Katie.
Oh, Byron Katie.
Yeah.
And her work is called thework.org. And it's really good. It's really good.
Excellent.
And are you familiar with Tara Brach? I'm sure you are. Yes. The radical, what is it? Radical self-acceptance.
Brain.
Yeah. I have that book. I haven't read it yet, of course, but as long as I see the title, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. But I think that that all this ties into that work. So, will you do sessions with people who aren't in the UK? We know you're based in the UK, but you do Zoom around the world.
All around the world. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it's so worth doing. I mean, it's hard to articulate the impact that it has because it's a bit like an invisible burden, but people genuinely, it changes people's relationships. And when I used to work on a retreat and we do some forgiveness work, and then a bit later on in the week, somebody would say, you'll never guess what? And I'd say, I probably will. And they'd say, oh, my mom or sister or whoever it is, she texted me and said she loved me. She's never told me that, you know. So these different, if something happens weirdly, you know, if you believe we're all, you know, connected, that when you do your forgiveness work, something changes that's intangible, you know, and it doesn't mean that you're going to reconcile, because, you know, just because you've forgiven somebody doesn't mean you have to go back into a relationship or remarry them. You know, it's all good. You don't have to do that. But at the same time, something changes, which is incredibly powerful. And
yes,
and that's the potential of it.
Well, this has been, Barbara, this has been so fantastic. If our listeners want to learn more about you, like, you know, they can find you, I'm assuming, like, you know, online, social media and those kinds of things, but what kinds of things are on the horizon for you next? So like the individual sessions that Tracy mentioned, you have other resources that our listeners might want to know about.
I do. I host online classes called Forgiveness Fields. So, and for two reasons. One is this very lovely idea from Charles Eisenstein about when anybody forgives, it adds to the field of forgiveness that's already there, which I love. This like a resonance, like a chord or something that you add to that. And then also the very beautiful Rumi poem that says, out beyond ideas of right doing and wrongdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Hmm. And again, this idea that we're going to a different place, if you like, of where you can lay down your arms, you can lay down your grievances against yourself or others and gather together. So it's a Zoom masterclass. So we gather together on Zoom, and it's great because I then guide everybody through the process, through the 7-step forgiveness made easy process, and everybody can work with their microphones off so they can speak out loud and say whatever they need to say. But I'm guiding everyone through this process at the same time. So you're in a group field, which is very powerful. And funnily enough, the I don't know when this will come out. I think it'll probably be after the next one, but I do self-forgiveness ones of those. The next one's at the end of February. I do them periodically because it's such an important subject. And it's the one that I get a lot of questions about. And people also say, do you have to forgive yourself first before you can forgive everybody else? And I definitely disagree, because I don't want to hold anybody up from forgiving. And sometimes self-forgiveness can be the hardest person to forgive, you know, forgiving yourself. So I host those usually once a month, and sometimes we have a theme. And like I do them, there's one on the International Day of Peace in September. I usually do one then, so that you can add your forgiveness as an act of amnesty for humanity. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. We'll make sure to add those into the show notes, and then any contact information or, you know, your website and those kind of things, so our listeners can absolutely find you.
My book. I didn't mention my book, which is called Forgiveness Made Easy. and it's got The Revolutionary Guide to Moving Beyond Your Past and Truly Letting Go. And that's available at, you know, bookstores online. And then also my website is forgivenessmadeeasy.co.uk.
And people can book through the website if they want to do the 6 sessions with you. Yeah. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
For people.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, excellent, Barbara. Thank you so much. This has been so amazingly insightful. You know, as Tracy mentioned, we started this podcast really to talk about where we had our missteps and kind of learning from our own, you know, our own past and trying to help others through that. And, you know, being able to talk with folks like you is just revolutionary for us and for our listeners, just to be able to, you know, even if, you know, like a pebble of something, it just makes them think and starts them down a whole road of, in this case, you know, their own self-forgiveness. This is, it's absolutely wonderful. So thank you for taking the time to be on here and sharing your knowledge. And, you know, again, we're excited to be able to talk about relationships and hope that our listeners are getting as much out of this as JC and I always seem to get out of it. But Anyways, thank you again. And for all of our listeners out there, until our next episode, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.